and welcome to Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, May 1st. It's 3 o'clock. My name is Shona Strasser. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk with Matt Robis about his first Friday opening tomorrow at the Juno Artist Gallery. Sharon Day, co-chair of the Republican National Committee, will be here to talk about her speech tonight for the Republican State Central Committee. We'll get an update of library activities from Beth Weigel. We'll also talk to some Perseverance Theater folks about their new production, Boeing Boeing, opening tomorrow night. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up, as she is every week. Garrison Keillor and Writer's Almanac, all that and more here on Juno Afternoon. And first, let's hear National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Research from North Carolina State University has found a connection between historical stressors and physiological development among previous generations of Cherokee people. North Carolina Public Radio's Rebecca Martinez reports.
In the late 19th century, anthropologist Franz Boas measured the skulls of adult Cherokees who had grown up as the nation was split. Some were driven west on the Trail of Tears, and others remained in the east but fled to the Smoky Mountains for safety. NC State forensic anthropologist Ann Ross analyzed the data and found that Cherokees from both groups developed smaller skulls with different shapes. Ross says that can be an indicator of environmental stress, including malnutrition. She says the Western band showed greater strain.
So they changed their environment. They had to change the way they lived. They had to change the way they procure food and all these things. They also dealt with raiding tribes around the area. So these things affected their health significantly.
Ross says this evidence of environmental stress on physiology provides a snapshot into Cherokee life and health issues. This type of forensic research is also an important tool for understanding health issues in developing countries. For National Native News, I'm Rebecca Martinez in Chapel Hill.
A South Dakota electric cooperative, which serves the Cheyenne River Reservation, is receiving funds to cover repair costs from a devastating blizzard in the fall. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
State and federal disaster agencies have approved nearly $21 million for Grand Electric Cooperative to recover from last October's blizzard. The South Dakota Office of Emergency Management and Federal Emergency Management Agency are providing 90% of repair and mitigation costs to the firm, which covers part of the Cheyenne River Reservation in western South Dakota. Jason Bowder with the South Dakota Office of Emergency Management says the funds will help Grand Electric put the grid back to normal.
Really, this grant provides them with the funding to be able to put all the power lines back to the way they were or bury them for mitigation for future disasters.
Grand Electric customers in Harding, Meade, Corson, Perkins, Butte, and Zeebach counties in South Dakota lost power as a result of the powerful blizzard. Bowder says across the entire area, about 50,000 electric customers were without electricity during part of October. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
The basketball season may be over, but two tribal teams were honored Wednesday on the Red Lake Reservation in Minnesota. The Fond du Lac and Red Lake boys basketball teams were recognized for advancing to state finals this year. And as Dan Huckalack from WGZS reports, tribal officials and community members came out to support the teams.
The 2013-14 boys basketball season was memorable for the teams from Red Lake and the Fond du Lac Ojibwe School. The Class A quarterfinals provided a historical milestone as two teams from reservations advanced to the state tournament the same year for the first time. Schools closed during the state playoffs. The Fond du Lac team also received a police escort to the southern boundary of the reservation, similar to the Hoosiers movie. Busloads of Anishinaabe fans from both reservations followed the respective teams south to Minneapolis. And because they played in back-to-back games, a large number from each community stayed for both games and cheered for both teams. It was also noteworthy due to the small enrollment for both schools. Red Lake has a 9th through 12th grade enrollment of 169, while enrollment at Fond du Lac Ojibwe is 74. Red Lake Tribal Chairman Buck Jourdain honored both teams on Wednesday for reaching the Minnesota State playoffs in March. After the ceremony, the two teams played in a scrimmage game. The two schools also faced one another earlier in the season, with Fond du Lac winning 83-81. For National Native News, I'm Dan Huckalack.
On on this day in 1999, the educational and cultural institution, the Alaska Native Heritage Center, opened in Anchorage. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, May 1st. My name is Shona. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have actually have a very special guest in the studio today. I'd like to welcome Sharon Day. She's the co-chair of the Republican National Committee. Welcome to town.
Thank you, Shona. Thank you for inviting me and honoring me to be here.
Yeah. So for folks who don't know why you're here, I was hoping that you could fill us in on what's going on
here. Absolutely. Well, I've been here in Alaska for the last 3 days, and what we're doing is, again, working with and support and standing with my fellow Republicans here in Alaska. We know we have an important race coming up. You've got your governor's race. You've got, again, a Senate race that I'm going to tell you the Republicans will work hard to make sure we put that back in our column. So from that point, but basically to work alongside your chairman, Peter Goldberg, National Committee Woman Debbie Joslin, National Committee Man Rob Sinkins, and to get a message, again, heard, and to unite our party and also the independents. We want to bring everybody together to make the best decision, and that is to elect a Republican senator and send Mark Baggage home.
And where will you be speaking this evening?
Tonight we're at the dinner. We're doing the kickoff dinner there at the Brainoff.
The Baranoff, yes.
Baranoff,
yes,
sorry.
You know, there's a lot of places like that here.
We're excited. And they've got they've got a full house that is down here. Like I said, our plane was full last night coming down, and the plane was packed, I heard, this morning with it. So we're excited for the opportunity to speak to my fellow Republicans right here in the great state of Alaska.
So you've actually, you've had quite an impressive career, just both independently as a business owner as well as in the Republican Party. And I was just wondering, for people who might not actually know what a co-chair of the Republican National Committee does, could you fill us in?
I would be glad to. Yeah, the chair and the co-chair work together to lead our party. And the structure is there's 168 members of the Republican National Committee, and they elect their officers every 2 years. And so as the co-chair, I do what I'm doing here in Alaska. Last week I was in Salt Lake City. I was in Maine. I go to Memphis next week, and basically work with the state parties to help them be strong, to help them with their grassroots operations, with, again, candidate recruiting, with training, with educating, with empowering, and getting our Republican candidates selected. So across the country, that's really pretty much the effort that we do, as well as fundraise, so that we have the tools in place to win elections as well. So it's kind of a one size doesn't exactly fit all, but mostly to work, again, we understand that the party, Republican National Committee, is not in Washington, D.C. The Republican Party is all around states all across this country and in our territories and in Alaska. So it's an honor to be here. But that's really the goal, is to make sure that, again, we stand with our Republican voters and our fellow Republicans all across the country.
You know, I've read some information about you online before you came here today, and a lot of your work, especially in the Republican Party, has to do with free enterprise. And I was wondering how you could talk about that a little bit and how you actually came to find that as one of the huge priorities for you.
Yeah. Well, that is, again, is vitally important. If we don't have jobs and a strong economy, you don't have a strong country. And the reality is that we've seen under the failed administration of Barack Obama, or President Obama's failed administration, that we've lost our small businesses. We've overregulated our small businesses. We've taken jobs away from individuals that need to have that opportunity. So that kind of became a focus with me and why I do what I do for my party. My husband and I built a business. We started with three of us. 10 years later, we were lucky. We worked hard, as many of us do, in their own businesses, and we were fortunate someone came in and offered to buy the company. But by the time we did 10 years later, we had 158 employees that worked with us. And we were in the health industry, health insurance, reinsurance industry for group accident health, life insurance. And so what you find when you build a business is that the business is made up of its of your employees. And I think that's the real important thing when we might attack a business owner or something. The reality is most of us that are business owners, most of us that small, large, that have that responsibility as business owners, not, you know, not necessarily in a corporation situation that's important, but as a business owner that grows it, what they understand is that you don't have 158 employees, you have 158 families. And that every decision that you made and every decision that my husband and I made was with the fully understanding that a right decision meant that we could take care of our employees and their families. The wrong decision meant that we couldn't. And they put their lot with us. They put their faith with us to make the right decision. So I think as small business owners, that's what we do. We struggle with that. We understand that it's bigger than ourselves. And so that is an important part of the process when I look at, again, why I'm a Republican and why I support my party. That's one of the issues. I think we are a party that believes in small business and growth, understands that the mechanism that makes our country thrive is, again, that small businessman that comes up with an idea and I'm going to try this, puts all his effort into it to make it successful and to bring those along with him that were part of that success. And so that's kind of been on our side, our party stands for that belief. We stand for the less regulation of our small businesses, to the encumbering of the paperwork in these small businesses, of again, of tax issues that are impossible for anybody to understand and to be able to work with. And so that became an important issue. And so did, again, the other thing that I'm very proud of at the party that I do is that the empowerment and engagement of women candidates and women activists. Again, we need as a party, and we understand it, I understand it and push for it very hard, that we're a party that has to have more women representation and women messengers to talk about our message. So it's something for the last 3 years that we have gone out there and recruited and trained women candidates, women activists. We want them to be state party chairs or county party chairs, precinct committee, federal office. We want them to run for school board. We want to encourage their passion, whatever it may be, to find that passion, and then we want to make sure that they have the tools in place to do it. So it's been a very honor to, again, as co-chair, to engage in that process, and very proud to say in the last year we trained almost 1,000 women across the country, some running for Congress, some running for Senate, some running for, like I said, mayors, for school board seats, and for state offices. So I'm excited with our effort at the Republican National Committee and the opportunity I've had to make that a part of my portfolio.
That's great. So you were also instrumental in bringing the National Convention to Florida, right?
As the National Committee Woman for Florida, yes.
So that must have been pretty exciting for you. What was that like?
Yeah. It was a great experience. It truly was. And when you look at this, the conventions, as we have the national conventions, it's such a wonderful opportunity to, again, to be with Republicans from around the country and to listen to their ideas and thoughts and why they're Republican. And again, an Alaskan Republican may have a different passion for why they're a Republican than other parts of the country. So it's wonderful to be able to experience that. But also for right now, we're going through the process of the site selection at the Republican Party. And for those cities that are looking at it, it was very beneficial for our community there in the Tampa Bay area. The money that was brought into the large and small businesses was a really big and true impact to our bottom line. So when the state parties look at it, it's a big responsibility, big safety, security responsibility that a community has to come, you know, to be able to provide and do. So it was just a wonderful opportunity. We had a wonderful candidate, and to be able to share that experience with my home state, not my home city, but my home state, to share that opportunity was fabulous.
Yeah, it seems like it would be, I guess, kind of what you're trying to create tonight, just this feeling
exactly.
of everybody in the same room working towards the same goal.
Exactly. And again, the importance of it, I, as we know that Alaska has a Senate primary coming up on the Republican side, the whole effort of what we do at a convention like that and when the primary is over is that I think you're going to find very quickly, maybe better than we've done in other years as working together as a Republican team, is that when the primary is over, we'll be there to support the candidate. Because at the end of the day, again, we want Alaskans to fight for their state. We want them to fight for their values, and we want them to get a representative that serves that, not someone that gets on a snowmobile, smiles at the camera, and says, I'm a son of Alaska. The fact of the matter is that he's invited EPA regulators to do evaluations on state-owned lands, not federal-owned lands, and I think Alaskans, what they want is they want less federal involvement in there. I don't think people come to Alaska to bring the federal government with them. So we want to hold, again, Mark Baggage accountable for voting. Again, coming to Alaska and say he's conservative when his voting record shows completely something opposite. But when the end, when our primary is over, we'll be united behind our candidate.
Sharon Day, co-chair of the Republican National Committee, speaking tonight at the Baranoff as part of the Republican State Central Committee. So you can check that out tonight. Sharon, thanks so much for joining us in the studio.
Oh, thank you for the honor of inviting me, Sharon. Thank you.
Don't never let your deal go down. Honey, don't let your deal go down. See your last old dollar's gone. Now it's honey and it's darling when I'm with you. And it's big nasty man when I'm gone. When you see me coming with the $50 bill, it's sweet daddy where you been so long. Well, don't let your deal go down. I never let your deal go down. Well, don't let your deal go down till your last old dollar's gone. That dress that you wear so fine. Got your slippers from a railroad man. Dress from working in the mine. Now don't let your deal go down. Don't never let your deal go down. Baby, don't let your deal go down. Till your last old dollar's gone. Any old place that I hang my hat.
And that's David Bromberg, who's actually coming up here as part of the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival. You can check him out Friday, May 2nd. Wait, that's tomorrow. Wow. Woo. Friday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. And, yeah, you can get tickets at JuneauJazzAndClasses.org in the studio with me. I'm so lucky. I have Beth Weigel here with our library update. Hey, Beth.
Hey, Shona.
How are you?
Great. What
Super.
A beautiful day.
Yeah. So it's amazing. What's going on at the library?
Oh, May is just, we're kicking May off. We're going to just go through such a transformation. We're getting ready for summer reading program. We've got some great programs at the library this month. But one of the big things we do, we take a break from doing our story times and our toddler times for a few weeks here because we, the librarians, the youth services librarians, go on the school tour and we bring the kids some skits that we've developed based on some of the beloved children's books that they know. So I thought it might be kind of fun for you and I just to give a little preview of what one of these skits is like.
I love that you bring in homework for me. Makes me very happy.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yes.
So I brought in the book Duck Rabbit, and, you know, it's a book about whether this critter in this book is a duck or a rabbit. It's kind of up for debate. So maybe we can just debate it here a little bit. What do you think?
Yes, I would love to read this skit here.
So you think, what do you think it is?
Hey, look, a duck.
That's not a duck. That's a rabbit.
Are you kidding me? It's totally a duck.
It's for sure a rabbit.
See, there's his bill.
What are you talking about? Those are ears, silly.
It's a duck, and he's about to eat this piece of bread.
No, no, it's a rabbit, and he's about to eat a carrot.
Quark, quark.
Wait, listen. Did you hear that? I hear duck sounds.
Well, that's funny. I distinctly hear rabbit sounds.
Now the duck is wading through the swamp.
No, no, the rabbit's hiding in the grass.
Here, see? It's flying.
Flying? It's hopping.
Look, the duck is so hot, he's getting a drink.
No, no, no. The rabbit is so hot, he's cooling off his ears.
Here, look at the duck through my binoculars.
Sorry, still a rabbit.
Here, ducky, ducky.
Here, you cute little rabbit.
Oh, great. You scared him away.
I didn't scare him away. You scared him away.
You know, maybe you were right. Maybe it was a rabbit.
Thing is, now I'm actually thinking it was a duck.
Well, anyway, now what do you want to do?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
Hey, look, an anteater.
That's no anteater. That's a brachiosaurus.
The end.
The end. So this is just a little preview. We not only take this play, this skit, and many other fun ones into the schools over the course of 2 weeks, we'll also be doing that as the best of these skits on our family night, which is happening on the third Thursday. We also have one on Tuesday. But we'll do the skits on the Thursday, the 15th of May. And our other family night is happening this Tuesday, the 6th. And it's going to be great because it's going to be the man with the yellow hat. So bring, you know, your stuffed monkey and come on down to the downtown library at 5:30 for our last Tuesday family night with AEYC. And then we'll have our third Thursday family night out at the Valley, and we'll do our skits. We also have some other really fun programs happening this month, including Stephen's Puppets. It's two guys who build these amazing puppets. They're marionettes. They're fully jointed, hand-carved. One of them has been an actor in his life, and they create these beautiful
sets. The puppet
sets.
Or the guy?
The guy.
Okay.
The puppet. Whoa. The puppet's an actor, yeah. So Zan and Dan Rayner, they're coming back. They've been here before, and they're bringing they do all different kinds of fairy tales, and this year they're doing Beauty and the Beast. So we're excited for that to happen on the 27th of May. We also are going to be at Community Day at the UAS campus. We're going to have a fun little... there's this great book called Flotsam where a little boy finds a camera on the beach and he, you know, develops the film back when you had to get film developed. And he realizes that there's pictures of other little kids that are holding up a picture of another little kid. And this camera has been circulating for so long that he, like, microscopes down to see all these children from the past that have been completing this process. So we're going to have a fun little Flotsam photo booth. And it's also... Children's Book Week, so we'll be giving out some free posters for that and having a lot of fun with the kids at Community Day. That's, of course, the 17th of the month.
That sounds like a great time.
Yeah. A couple things for adults, too, of course. We always have programs for kids and adults. We've been continuing to have a second Friday tea over at the Douglas Library, and it's everybody's favorite topic this month. Chickens. So come and talk about chickens and books that have chickens in it and how you're raising your chickens and enjoying some tea at the same time and cookies. And that's always a fun time. That's Friday the 9th at 5 at the Douglas Library. And still lots of great things happening for teens as well. We've got the Teen Manga Club that meets every other week. They'll meet tomorrow at the Zach Gordon Center and then again on Friday the 16th. And if you're interested in helping us develop some of the teen events for the summer, get on board with the teen advisory board meetings. I think the next one actually happens right at the beginning of June, but you can call the library and talk to Amelia about the teen advisory board, and that helps us get some of the great events for teens scheduled for the summer. And not to leave out our Spanish speakers, we've been doing our Spanish story time, Cuentos Infantil, and that happens every Wednesday night out at the Valley at 6:30. So lots of fun things happening at the library this month, and then we're going to just launch into summer reading program, and this summer's theme is Fizz Boom Read. We're promoting science and science experiments, and we'll have some fun things like that happening all summer, and you know, just encouraging children to continue to read throughout the summer and keeping up that habit till they get back to school next year.
Oh, that sounds like a fun time. Fizz boom read.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
hopefully we won't blow anything up.
But where can people find out kind of the list of events if they're looking for said calendar?
Right. Well, we have a Facebook page, and we always post things to our Facebook page and create events for things. But also our website has a list of all of our events that are happening, and that's juno.org/library.
Fabulous. Beth Weigel, always a pleasure to hear what's going on at the library because you all do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So what do you think? Is that a duck or a rabbit?
You know, I think it's a drabbit. That's a rabbit.
A rabbit?
Yes. How's that for a non-committal
answer?
There
you go.
Thanks for joining us.
Yep.
And here is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 1st of May, 2014. May Day. Celebrated in many countries as Labor Day. It was in 1886, May Day. Unions around the country went on strike in support of an 8-hour workday. It was a big national holiday in the Soviet Union, and in many places, a celebration of spring and fertility. In medieval England, people gathered flowers to bring in the May. They put up a maypole. The Celts built bonfires on May Day. In Germany, it was the day of a pagan festival that was assimilated by the Christian church and turned into the feast day of St. Walpurgis. And the night before, Walpurgisnacht, still celebrated in parts of rural Germany as a kind of Valentine's Day. 1786, on this day, Mozart's opera The Marriage of Figaro had its premiere in Vienna. Story of a single day in the palace of Count Almaviva, who tries to seduce Susanna, who's the young fiancée of the court valet Figaro. The cast for opening night of The Marriage of Figaro included an Irish tenor named Michael Kelly, who later wrote, "I can still see Mozart dressed in his red fur hat, trimmed with gold, standing on the stage with the orchestra at the first rehearsal, beating time for the music. The players on the stage and in the orchestra were electrified." It's the birthday of Joseph Heller, born 1923 in Brooklyn, who was working at an advertising agency when he came up with the first line of a novel. It was love at first sight. The first time he saw the chaplain, Yossarian fell madly in love with him. And Joseph Heller went on to finish his novel, which came to be called Catch 22, though at first it was called Catch 18. The title has now entered common speech, Catch 22, as a description of an unsolvable logical dilemma, a vicious circle. It was on this day, 1956, Jonas Salk's polio vaccine was made available to the public for the first time, using a dead polio virus. Another scientist, Albert Sabin, developed an oral vaccine using a live virus. The mass inoculations against the disease largely eradicated polio on Earth. Franklin D. Roosevelt was commonly believed to have had polio, but a review of his case in 2003 determined that he most likely suffered from Guillain-Barré syndrome. And today is the birthday of the astrophysicist Joseph Allen Hynek, born Chicago, 1910. Best known for his work studying UFOs, he came to be called a ufologist, unidentified flying objects. It was Hynek who came up with the term close encounter, which inspired the hit movie of 1977, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, a movie that Hynek served as a consultant to. Here's a poem for today, a little lyric by an unknown author entitled The Pig. It was the 1st of May, a lovely warm spring day. I was strolling down the street in drunken pride, but my knees were all aflutter, and I landed in the gutter, and a pig came up and lay down by my side. As I lay there in the gutter, thinking thoughts I could not utter, a lady passing by did softly say, "You can tell a man who boozes by the company he chooses," and the pig got up and slowly walked away. The Pig by an Unknown Author. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry App. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's 3:30. And in the studio with me, I have Matt Robis. Welcome to the studio, Matt.
Thank you, Shona.
So you're an artist here, and you make these really beautiful, beautiful decoys. And they're actually waterfowl. Is that mostly what you do? Yeah.
Most of them are. And that's how it got started, with regular hunting-type duck decoys. And then I got interested in other types of birds, and now much of what I produce is sandpipers and shorebirds and great blue herons and so forth. So a lot of those birds aren't even huntable anymore, of course. So calling these decoys is kind of it's in an art tradition. It's not that they can be used for decoys anymore, really.
So you have, and I'll kind of get the details out here, you open your, tomorrow, you actually have an opening at the Juno Artist Gallery. You're the featured artist there this month?
Right, that's correct. 175 South Franklin in the Senate Building.
And people can stop by there, and you'll be there to kind of show them this beautiful work? And
I will. My work has been on display there over the winter, and it will be there, as long as I'm at the gallery. But tomorrow I will be there and would be happy to, show people how I do put these things together in person.
And so it's interesting that you say that it's an older tradition, because it's art form. These are wood, because now they're plastic and, they're just different materials.
Right, exactly. In the old days, mostly on the East Coast in the Mississippi Valley, a little bit on the Pacific Coast, not really in Alaska, these birds were put together to attract birds for harvest. And that spawned an art form, kind of a genre of folk art that they didn't mean to make, but later on people recognized that some of those guys really had a way of putting some artistic contours into the wood and painting them. And I just personally got interested. Actually, my son was in a decoy making class for 4-H, and in order to lure in the parents, they let the parents do some carving. And I got hooked, and then being originally from the East Coast, I kind of harkened back to some roots and have just been trying to develop this since then. These are a little different. There's different branches of quote-unquote decoy carving. A lot of people these days are going towards ultra-realistic birds with every little feather carved in, and they're like a photorealistic copy, which is something that requires tremendous skill. But it's not really where I want to go. I'm more into an impressionistic feel for the bird. Just like the original decoy carvers, they weren't interested in detail. They were interested in postures and coloring and, the appearance of the bird to lure in.
Because they got
to
get the job done.
Exactly. it was a tool. And this is more in that style than in the show style that's come up more recently.
So I'm looking through this beautiful book of your work, and you'd have a lot of great blue herons, and it's interesting because they are all in different positions. I was wondering, what is the most challenging thing about this type of carving?
For me, the carving is moderately challenging, but I actually have an easier time with the carving than I do with the painting. and on a great blue heron, the most challenging thing is by the time I'm done with one of them, my arms are hanging at my sides because there's just a lot of work. These are all handmade. So I'm using rasps and draw knives and gouges. And by the time you're done putting one of those guys together, you're pooped out pretty well. And then the painting, every time I paint a bird, it's kind of like starting all over again. I think I know how to do it, and you get started on a bird, and it just, you have to kind of recreate the technique all over again every time.
Do you build a lot from memory, because you actually you're a wildlife biologist yourself, or in the past, yes?
in my past, yeah. I retired as a wildlife biologist.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is from an eye, you know, observing over the years. Some of it is from reference materials. A lot is from photographs, where you start with a two-dimensional image, and then you have to fill in the third dimension, which is sometimes interesting. And some of those birds have been carved two or even three times to whittle them down to where they should be. Looking at my first birds, they're these big bread loaf-looking things. And it takes a while to get the courage to start cutting off more and more wood to get down to the true contours of a bird, which is almost all round. Everything on a bird is round, when you think of it, except for a couple of points at the end. So it takes a while to kind of get that figured out.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. And then tomorrow is they're up right now at the gallery, so you could get one now if you wanted to.
Sure, they're, or you could just see them in the gallery anytime the gallery's open. And now that we've hit the tourist season, that is every day of the week. And then
and tomorrow you'll be there.
I'll be there, yeah. You know, starting about 4:30 until 7 or 7:30, something like that.
Okay, perfect. And these are for sale, or you could just come look at them, too.
Certainly.
I mean, they are beautiful. They're just a beautiful look, and they're light, and they just, yeah, they're very pretty.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for stopping by.
My pleasure.
And that's the Ataka Quartet. They're the featured artists on Juno Jazz and Classics this year. You should definitely check that out. Get your tickets. That's going on. It actually starts tomorrow, so that's pretty cool. Speaking of starting tomorrow, I have in the studio with me some very funny and fun guys. James Sullivan, hi.
Yep, yep, yep.
And
hello, Shona.
Brandon Demery.
Hello,
hi.
Shona.
And they are both highly involved in an upcoming production of Perseverance Theater. It's called Boing Boing. Thanks for joining me in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Yay.
Yeah. So, Brandon, how about let's start. What is Boing Boing? What is it?
It's a comedy. It was written in 61, and it recently had a revival on Broadway in 2008, where it won, I think, the best comedic revival, or it won the Tony for something. It is the story of an American expat who is living in Paris in 1960, and he has a French maid, and he has an American buddy from long ago, back in college or early years of being a young man, who shows up at his door, a fellow American, and who is played by James Sullivan. His name is Robert. And Bernard, the expat, the American, he basically hands over the responsibilities of managing his three fiancés to his buddy and his maid, and slowly drive them insane. He has three fiancés because they're all air hostesses. And back in the 1960s, flying was absolutely glamorous. And the air hostesses had to go through this rigorous process just to get hired. Of course, intelligence was high on the list, and social graces and skills and charm and sex appeal as well. So all of these air hostesses are knockouts. One's Italian, one's German, one's American. And because Boeing, the airplane manufacturer, releases a new jet engine back in the 1960s, the timetables upon which he devises his and structures his whole polygamous lifestyle. It's not really polygamous. Bachelor, freewheeling, or free open kind of a lifestyle. That all changes, and the air hostesses end up in the apartment at the same time.
And James, so what happens to you then? Because you're like the guy who plays the guy who helps the guy.
Who immediately starts juggling three different ladies. Yes, and trying to keep it. You know, it's a classic comedy farce. You know, pushing one goes into a room through the door, and another one enters in the next door. It's great fun. And all this meanwhile, you know, Robert has arrived because He basically says he's not much of a woman's man, and he's very lonely, and he thought maybe he'll come to Paris and maybe find his great love. And so he just kind of learns from his master, his good friend, who seems to have a bevy of ladies who just seem to come and go with the airlines that they work for. And he learns on the fly very quickly. About the opposite sex.
Right. Yeah, they're opposites in a way. Yeah. So at the top of the story, you have Bernard, who's this bachelor, a guy who has the stamina and the physical ability to manage three relationships. And he's the exact opposite. He's looking for something conservative and traditional and no frills. Just, you know, a nice, sweet girl. That's all the guy from Wisconsin wants.
Right.
And, he's, through circumstance, he's been thrust into a sort of overnight course in
and how to
in
be
how to
the ladies'
bachelor.
Man. Yeah, ladies' man.
Right.
Become a ladies' man before the audience, right before them.
He does pretty well. I mean, he comes pretty darn close.
I learned
right?
how to juggle. That's right.
But he, in the end, does end up in love. I don't want to spoil it.
No.
But
no spoiler alert.
He does find his fiancée.
There you go.
In Paris.
Yeah.
Well, Paris is the city of love, after all. Yes.
That's what I'm told.
Yeah. So it's interesting because on the kind of outside as an audience perspective, a farce should seem like it's very easy, and it just kind of rolls off the tongue because it's comedy and it just goes really fast and everything. But for an actor and for a director and for the people that are making it look flawlessly, it's a very different process. And I was wondering if Brandon and James, you could talk a little bit about kind of the process of creating a farce.
I guess the toughest thing is that there is so much in the timing. There is I guess with tragedies or melodramas, you can see, you know, if you saw the same production in two different towns with two different sets of actors, you could see some different timing and some very different styles come out. Now, I think with the farce, there are certain things that, I mean, like I said, when one girl leaves the room, the other one has to come in, but the doors have to have that type of timing where one enters and one exits simultaneously, but the lines and the delivery and the jokes also have to have that kind of crisp timing, and it proves to be
very
much more difficult.
Yeah, very quick pace, which is what we're working on right now. We're trying to get it up to speed because we want to stay ahead of the audience. And so far so good, actually. I for my taste, I just like them to moving along a lot faster.
By the end, I'm a sweaty mess.
Yeah.
I've done 10Ks that I sweated less.
Well, it's an interesting thing because when you look at kind of the text, you look at the play itself, you can actually read the beats. You know, you can read the moments. You're like, well, this beat has got to go fast, and then we're going to move on. What kind of work do you do as a director kind of around the text in that way?
For this, we did table work for about a week. And we talked about character relationships. We talked about action, what you might be doing in a particular moment. And then we got up on our feet as quickly as we could. We didn't talk about the beats separate from one another quite yet. We didn't get to that point because we've been running it and... You can talk all you want. You can mark in your script where this happens and where that happens, but until actors are up on their feet, they're in the space, and you actually see it and hear it, those things can change. And you can't really, you know, you can't make a decision on a final moment until it's been run a few times, I think. But naturally, the actors, when they are in that groove and when they are running through these scenes, will find those moments naturally. Because they're inherent to the script. They're written in there. They're so glaringly obvious. But when you're an actor and you're the instrument and you're also the person playing your own instrument, it's really difficult to discern exactly where those are because you just want to stay in the moment and be ready for the joke or the setup line for your punchline. And comedy is incredibly hard, and it's been a lot of fun.
You know, I made the joke that it was, you know, I sweat more on stage than I do in a 10K, but the show itself is almost like, you know, that type of race when the gun goes off, the lights, and it just keeps going. It happens in real time, you know, other than the intermissions, the everything is happening in that moment. You don't get the chance to breathe, that chance to stop, because especially, you know, in this play, one lady air hostess leaves, and then the next one arrives, and then the other one's in the other room, and you have to keep going, and
gotta
that's
keep
the fun
ball
of
the air.
That's the fun of the story is how they were able to keep it going until it crashes.
and it's a three-actor, and it's great because each act in itself is its own unique progression of action that leads to an end. But then at each end, there's a, this is going to happen. New information comes into the circumstances, and then we look forward to the second act, and then again on the third act. So there's definitely a build from act to act, and then within each act, there's definitely a build to a big crescendo.
That's great. So speaking of kind of great, you all have a fabulous cast that you're working with. I mean, I get blown away by just the amount of talent in that room, as well as designers. So I was wondering, James, maybe you could tell us a little bit about the cast and maybe Brandon fill us in on the designers.
Yes, we have a few of the locals. Start there, local first. Christina Apathy, Allison Holtkamp, two young ladies, wonderful actresses, a lot of fun to work with. I've done many shows at Perseverance over the years. And they're wonderful. Ty and Becky Orford, also here from Juno,
who plays Bertha, the French maid.
The French maid, and she's a hoot. And then we have two outsiders. It's been great to work with. They're a lot of fun. Bristol Pomeroy and Leah
Fisher.
Fisher.
Yeah, two guest artists from New York City, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have them. And what about this design team? Because I've been listening to the music, and I just can't help but rock out.
Lucy Peckham is doing the sound design, and she's wonderful. She's done a lot of research on relatively obscure, at least to my ears, popular songs of Europe, European sounds, German and French, of the 1960s that she's incorporated into act transitions and scene transitions and pre-show and post-show. So that's fantastic. We have a first-time set designer, Ernest Eckerson, who was very open and allowed me to throw my two cents in there, and we have created this amazing set. It's a lot of fun.
I'm partying
on
that set.
I'm up on it as much as I can be. Yes. It's the kind of set that you would want to act on. and it's a sunken 1960s living room-ish high-rise apartment in Paris that we're going for a modern take on that, and it's a lot of fun. Lights is artistic director Art Roach. He's doing the lighting design. It's fantastic. It all takes place from mid-morning to bedtime in one 12-hour period, and we see that change. That's a lot of fun. And who am I missing? Props is Austin Tagaban. He's doing a fantastic job. All the little knickknacks that he's brought onto the set, the attention to detail has been fantastic. And Rick Celi is doing costumes. And he and I both had a lot of fun in doing a lot of research on that, and it's fantastic.
Yes, the women look wonderful and very comical at the same time.
Yes, got to have that.
Yes.
Got to have that.
They pulled it off.
Tomorrow night, opening.
Yeah,
7:30
at Perseverance Theater. We're ready.
That's right. And it runs through May, so definitely check that out at perseverancetheater.org. And, opening night.
Are you coming, Shona?
I'll be there.
All right.
I'm stoked. I can't wait, actually.
I'll be there, too.
Well, I'll be there.
I might come, too. Yeah.
Well, thanks, James. All right. Brandon Demery and James Sullivan here talking about Boeing Boeing. Thanks so much for joining us in the studio.
Thank you.
And here we have a little bit of The Zombies taking us back to the 60s.
Well, no one told me about her, the way she lied. Well, no one told me about her, how many people cried. But it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there. Well, let me tell you about the way she looked. The way she had said, the color of her hair. Her voice was soft and cool, her eyes were clear and bright, but she's not there.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, May 1st, and in the studio with me, I don't have Nancy DeCherney, but what a perfect representative of the Arts Council, Catherine Hatch. Hi, thanks for coming.
Mayday, mayday.
That's right.
That's today.
Careful, careful what you say on air.
It is mayday. There's no emergency that I know of, except for the urgency to go outside and enjoy the sun. Can you believe the weather we're having?
Love it.
Perfect opening to our Juno Jazz and Classics Fest, which is probably all you've been talking about for a month now, just leading up to it. All the different artists are starting to get here. Shows are starting to sell out, so we can talk a little bit more about that coming up. Another thing that's happening this month, starting today, is the 2014 Bicycle Commute Challenge. I don't know if you bike to work, if that's a possibility for you, Shona. I could if I got a bike, so that's going to be the first step for me. Today I walk, though, so I feel like I'm halfway there. And that's just kind of a fun thing to promote biking. It's certainly the best weather to do that kind of thing. And if you do it enough times, you win some prizes and build community, that sort of thing. What else we got going on today? There's the filming of The Artist tonight here at 360, I believe. Not The Artist, the silent film, obviously, the TV show that we're going to start doing at Arts 360. And we're starting with painter David Woody. So that's pretty cool. You can come for free. Be a part of live TV and just watch them put that together and see how it grows. Always karaoke at McGibney's on Thursday starting at 9. And all week they're showing Under Your Skin at Gold Town. I don't know if you've seen that movie, heard about that movie.
No.
This is going to be kind of a departure from the rest of the events going on around town because this is a sci-fi drama. I don't know. It's going to be one of those films that divides people, that people will be talking about. Definitely not a family-friendly one, but it stars Scarlett Johansson, and it's about aliens preying on humans in Scotland, and in a sexy way, maybe? It's, I don't know.
If it has Scarlett Johansson in it, that probably is in a sexy way.
But I think I will just be a little bit too afraid of that one. But if you're into gothic horror, man, maybe you don't even know you are. Go see it and find out. Tomorrow, we've got the very first of the Classics Jazz and Classics Festival concerts, right? David Bromberg coming to town. He'll be at the Elizabeth Petrovich Hall in Bee Hall. And there are still tickets available, so you can get those, the usual ticket outlets at the Jack, online, at Hearthside Books, etc. So check that out. We'll also be starting Juno Dance Theater's Ballet to Broadway. That plays all weekend. That's their annual dance recital. That's going to be at Thunder Mountain, and you can get tickets to that also in the Jack online Hearthside. 10% off to groups of four or more. We also have the opening night of Boing Boing. Is that correct?
That is true.
We just had the preview last week, if anybody went to go see that. There are going to be a few more upcoming pay-as-you-can ones, but official opening night is tomorrow, Friday. I can't wait to see that play. It's going to be so funny. You should not get engaged to three different women of three different nationalities at the same time.
A bad idea.
Bad idea. But this guy didn't know it, I guess, and we're going to watch him in his torture on stage and just make fun of him for that.
It's also First Friday tomorrow.
Can you believe it?
No.
It's. I always think, First Friday is not really a big deal unless it's December, unless it's Gallery Walk. But sure enough, each month we get a whole bunch of stuff. At the Jack alone, I feel like we're going to be packed to the gills. Come on down and join us. Not only will we be having our 40th anniversary retrospective art show. Now, of the 40 years the Juno Arts and Humanities Council has been in existence, we've only had the gallery for the last 17. So even in that time, though, we've been able to exhibit hundreds of artists. We invited all of them to come and bring something to us. Now 35 responded. So we've got a pretty packed gallery. It's very diverse stuff, ranging from woodworks to pottery to paintings to sketchings. And a lot of the artists are going to be there. So come and check that out starting at 4:30. We also have KTO's very own Jeff Brown signing copies of his newly released Real Alaska Mag. Symphony will be selling raffle tickets. And perhaps best of all, Suds and Duds. Have you heard of this event?
I love Suds and Duds. Tell us about it. It's so cool.
If you are a guy and you need a little bit of help in the fashion department, or you just
want to... Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, really.
Guys.
If you don't think this applies to you, it probably does. So just, if you're a guy, you're going to want to show up at the Jack. We have the Suds and Duds. It's a bunch of different clothing orgs from around town getting together, trying to help, okay? They're just there to help you. Pick out some stylish clothes. So you go and get a suit. Don't panic at the word suit. Maybe you'll just pick up some more Carhartts, but they've got different stuff. And they'll have a beer garden. And it's free to just go and try things on in a safe environment. There'll be dressing rooms. No one will make fun of you. And you can go and get some new stuff for summer. New season of clothes. This might be a new concept, but it's a thing. And you can get help.
Yeah, look good. Look good around town this summer. What else is going on for First Friday events?
So many things. Here in the studios, we'll have Olivia... Well, what's her last name? Peteshka, I think. I should know because I see her all the time. She's got beautiful watercolors. She's out of UAS normally, but that'll be all over the studio here. So once you're at the Jack, pop over to K2 and see that as well, mixed media things. You can also walk downtown. Bunch of things going on. Canvas is going to have the long exposure nightscape photography by Adam Taylor. Of course, Pie in the Sky will be open, so you can grab a treat there. We've got Wilderness Prints Photography by Larry Johansson at Silver Bow. The Rookery just put up Dragonflies and Jellyfish at M.K. McNaughton. If you went today, you'd get a little sneak preview, but the official opening will be tomorrow. Lindsay Culver is going to be down at Vanity, and they're also having the second annual Gastineau Humane Society art auction, among other auction items, down at Vanity. So go and support that. It's right above High Tide Tattoo. We've got hand-carved duck decoys at the Juno Artist Gallery. We've got general Alaskan artists at Fairweather Gallery. Caribou Crossing is getting ready for summer, and they're going to be featuring 60 Alaskan artists down there across from the library. So got us beat. We had 35 artists at the Jack. They've got 60, but a little bigger space, so kind of understand. Bears Lair's got new stuff in for summer you want to see. Annie Kales has Candace Christie, which is, I think, stuff that both locals and visitors are going to appreciate, because you can definitely see the Juno in her artwork. You see, like, people in rain boots and umbrellas. You see treadmill, but people can make a memory or take stuff that reminds them of home. We've got originals by Chris Appelhans at Alaska Robotics. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Come to the Jack, pick up your map, walk around. If you want to walk all the way to Copa, which you should, you can go and check out Brandon Howard's Palettes and Porcelain show. His stuff always sells really fast. You want to get there on the first day. Besides, Copa still has a lot of their Easter ice cream left. So Cadbury cream ice cream, yes, please.
Yeah. Wow. We are actually... We only got through Friday, I think.
That's how much stuff is going on. Juno Dozen Classics is going to take up the whole next week of stuff. So just check out our calendar online, jack.org, and get the full scoop, and hope to see you around town.
Yeah, there you have it. Catherine Hatch, thank you so much. You definitely got to get more information online because we are totally...
That was all I could do.
It was wonderful, too. So thank you so much for coming to talk to us about all the cool arts that's going on here in Juneau.
Thanks.
And this is KTOO Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thanks so much for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. Tune back in tomorrow at 3 p.m. for Friday's update.
We believe victims are growing more confident in our system. Because these crimes are underreported, we took steps to...